Sorry, I hadn't pulled the air horn out in a while.
I love the air horn. Well, welcome to the Interracial John podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you are very white indeed.
Thank you, I think.
Yes.
I think.
Well, you think. If this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And please, if you listen to us in either of those services, subscribe to our show because that helps us like move up in rankings. And it's important so we have data to see how many people are listening, even though I still think it's like 13.
Barely a dozen.
And you can also find our show on our a baker's dozen. On our website, interracialjohn.com. And we're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John, again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback. So in addition to subscribing, you can interact with us. There's quite a few ways to do that. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. So you can hear, you can ask us questions or really write anything. If it's 5 stars, we'll read it. Well, not anything. Can't be crazy. You can also email us at interracialjohn@gmail.com. We also read those on the air. And you can leave us a voicemail. Super easy. Pick up your phone. Dial 657-JOHNERS. That's J-A-W-N-E-R-S. If it's under 3 minutes and not crazy, we'll play that on the air. Shout out to Karen and Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And so, yeah, interact with us. We love it.
Yeah. You know, I was just curious because you were talking about data and metrics and, you know, ranking and shit. So I just did a keyword search, interracial. I thought, well, you know, maybe the John's on like the first,
Way. It's going to be all like porn.
I don't know if it's all porn, but we're not even in the first like 13 SERP
pages. Which
probably
shouldn't be.
We're a little too tiny.
Yeah.
We'll keep it that way.
Tiny.
If we're in the first page of results on interracial, we've gone too far.
Yeah, we've taken it too far.
So I bet you if you
Googled interracial podcast, we might come up on that first page. Maybe. I don't know. Chonello will probably be at the near the top of that.
Whoa.
What?
Number one.
See? Boom. Interracial podcast.
And that's actually our site. Yeah. iTunes is like number four.
Boom. See?
And there's a pod feed for interracial podcasts. Are we on this one? Addicted to Race.
I don't know. There's another one.
Mixed Chicks and Chonella.
We got to get on that one.
We got to get on that one.
Yeah, we'll get on that. I don't think Mixed Chicks is doing their podcast anymore. Anyways. Enough about that.
You would talk about our kitchen ghost?
We do have a ghost here in the house. I've mentioned this several times on the show before.
I'm not going to refute it.
Let me just say this. I tell you all the time. I have trouble sleeping, folks out there listening. I have insomnia. I'm frequently up super late. And Drew goes to bed like at 9:32. So he'll go to sleep and I'm still up like watching TV, doing whatever. And frequently, I'll hear literally somebody walking through the house on the first floor, somebody doing something in the kitchen, even though it's just me here in the house. And when I tell very white guy about these things, he's like, whatever, it's just the ice machine, blah, blah, blah. It's the
all right,
heat,
listen, listen, there's like you kind of like yada, yada, yada. Like, it's like every other little bump and like little tiny thing.
It's not little tiny things. They're not there. I recorded it for you one night. I played it and you were like, oh yeah, I did hear that. It's loud and it's significant.
Listen, our last house was much, much newer. It was only like 30 years old.
Yeah.
It was much more like brick.
I've lived in old places.
It's not just old places. It's where we're at and the different like, fauna and little like organisms and shit that are around.
No,
our last house didn't have trees where squirrels and raccoons and shit could jump from the tree to our roof back and forth.
I'm downstairs. Does that have anything to do with the roof?
Listen.
What are you talking about right
now? There are like a billion different things that you say.
Well, anyways, whatever.
No, let me tell my piece. There are noises that happen that are like, that is their fridge. That's the ice maker. That's just wood. That's just a house. That's this. There was, I'm willing to say, an incident. Maybe two.
There's been multiple incidents.
I'll give you two.
Anyways, we had the most significant one this past week.
That's number one.
So I'll let you tell it because you were firsthand witness. I was sitting in the other room and I was like, I hope he sees this shit because now he'll fucking believe me because I'm telling you there's a ghost in here.
There was I think it was a heavy cream container. Or no, ice cream.
It was Häagen-Dazs ice cream.
So we had some, went to Trader Joe's, got the little apple pies you heat up in the oven. If you haven't had those from Trader Joe's, they're fucking fantastic. It's like a little apple pie pocket, like individual serving, pop it in the oven, scoop of Häagen-Dazs, good dessert. So we had that. And we'd used all the Häagen-Dazs. And the pint container. It was on the countertop. And you're in our sunroom, and I'm by the back door, which is sort of on a 90-degree angle off the kitchen. Right. So we're
both looking into space.
We're kind of like perpendicular to one another, yeah. And we both have a direct line of sight to the Häagen-Dazs pint can on the countertop. Direct line of sight.
Yep.
And I might not have been looking right at it, but
I was looking at it.
Corner of my eye, I'm maybe getting something out of the trash, and it just straight up, bloop, falls off the counter.
It didn't fall off the counter. Flipped off the counter and crashed onto the floor. It dented the side of it.
It was kind of bizarre. I'm not gonna lie. Like it didn't like wobble. There wasn't like a breeze. It didn't like teeter. It was like on the countertop and then like plip on the ground. And I was like, and I right away was like, the fuck was that? Did you see that? And you're like, I fucking saw that. Did you fucking see that? That was a little much. Mm. I don't know what that was. I'm not going to say it was a ghost.
There's a ghost.
But it was kind of like,
there's the a
fuck.
Ghost.
The fuck. There the other one was ghost. That noise. The, yeah. There was a, and we hear, like I said, there's like the ice maker makes like a click, a clack. And there's like there is, I don't know what it is, but there's something in that right behind the refrigerator that's sort of like a, call it like an HVAC column. Like all the water and all the air ducts and shit and all the electric goes.
You just explained away the ghost.
It goes from the basement.
Did the air ducts knock over that ice cream container?
I'm not
too?
Talking about there. I'm just saying there are generally sounds that are like, right. You know, popping of metal or here or there. Things that I can be like, okay, that is not ghost worthy. But the Häagen-Dazs cop just like flipping off the countertop
this
and then on the
floor. White people don't be afraid of stuff.
No, nah, you're wrong. White people believe in ghosts more than they believe in racism.
Yeah, they believe in ghosts more than believe in racism, but that doesn't mean they're afraid of ghosts. Like, y'all will try and, like, talk to the ghost. Black folks don't do that.
I'm not going to be, like, talking to no ghosts.
I didn't say you were, but I'm saying that your dismissal of the ghost is...
That's steeped in white.
Tied to your whiteness. Yes.
Nah, that's just me being me.
So if I'm possessed one day, listeners, you'll know it's all Drew's fault.
Let's hope you get possessed by something cool. Like, I don't know whether,
what would be cool?
I don't know. Like a decent possession? Like, I'm not sure what that would be.
I don't know either. Let's move on.
So we were talking about our dog, Beatrice, and such a problematic white woman. And I love that you tweeted a picture of our other dog, And one of our tweets was like, is that the problematic white woman?
Yeah, shout out to Asa. Asa.
But no, so Beatrice, furthering her problematic behavior, she loves balls. She's got part lab, part beagle. So
She's
really into like tennis balls and just, she'll fucking sit there and like play fetch for hours. She'll chew on a tennis ball. So we get her these tiny little Kong balls because she's not a big dog. She's a little dog. And we literally have what, like a dozen of them? We've gotten multiple. They come in a bag of three, and I'll get a bag of three, and I'll just tear it open, and she's like, yeah! And she'll get like two of them in her mouth at the same time and run around. Like, she really fucking loves these balls. But, and I don't know what this is. She has like a, I want this one specific ball, despite them being identical, right? They're like nine yellow fucking Kong balls on the floor, and she knocks them under the couch, and then she whines, and she'll like look at you. Like, she has a whole conversation with you. She gives you a side eye first, and you look at her, and you're like, huh. And then she kind of twirls her head, and then you look at her again, and she'll go, She'll make a little like, Like, she kind of gives this thing. And if you literally go, what is it? She'll go point to it. She'll put her nose under the couch. And she'll start pawing at it. You're like, okay, got it. You want the fucking ball.
Okay, so to me, like, so far, it's like, okay, her ball's under there. She can't get it. She needs you to help her out. Cool.
That's not problematic white woman behavior.
That's normal dog behavior.
Right. So under the couch, there's like eight fucking balls. And they're way under there. I got to, like, lift the couch up.
Eight balls. They're the eight
identical.
Exact same, identical, brand, size, everything, same ball.
And somehow she's able to differentiate and discriminate because I'll go under the couch. Again, I can like lift it up, move my fucking arm. I'm like scooping a ball out and she'll take it and she'll spit it out. I'm like, no.
Nope, that's not the one.
Straight, put your nose right under the couch. She goes,
She'll do it like 12 times.
I was like, are you fucking
kidding
me?
You'll get to like the sixth ball and she's like, thanks, finally.
Yeah, and then she walks away like, all like satisfied.
What took you so long?
And then we give her treats when she goes outside and you know, does certain things, she gets a treat. And unfortunately, after a decade now, she's been kind of conditioned to this treat behavior. And if in her mind she thinks she's deserving a treat, fucking patience of Job,
dude.
She
won't move.
She sits where the treats are in a cupboard.
The treat.
And she sits right next to that cupboard for hours.
And we're like watching, like, where the fuck is Beatrice? But looking
sleeping.
There, and she's like, bitch, where is my treat?
she finally gives up and she lays down and goes to sleep next to the treats.
She don't move, though.
No,
she
not
waits.
At all.
Because she's like, when they wake up and they see me, they'll give me
a
treat.
You know that? You know what the
She trained us.
That's entitled. That's the problematic behavior.
No, but she trained us. She knows if she sits there. Whenever we notice her sitting there, it's like, oh, give her a treat.
Oh, because it just won't. It'll go on. I feel bad. I'm going to sit here with my dog, like, pining on the floor for 4 hours. I feel terrible. So I'm finally like, just fuck it. Give her a treat.
She's
whatever.
Ridiculous.
Well, so problematic white people. I want to talk a little bit about our religion. I
was on the VUU today.
You were. And I love what Black Lives UU is doing for our religion specifically. I think you're doing a lot. But I think Unitarian Universalism as a faith, man, I just sometimes I don't say I struggle with it. But And I've said this to other white people. I've tweeted about this. It is my opinion that UUs, because we're progressive, we're liberal, we're also very, very white and, you know, kind of overly educated and tend to be older, skewed to the East Coast kind of Boston area. But nevertheless, it's a group of people that are, you know, especially our last church, right? We were there for 4 years and we weren't just a part of this church. We led committees.
Yeah.
We ran the auction.
Absolutely.
We held sermons.
Yeah.
We had, like, you know, counsel with our minister. Like, we were front and center, and we lived like 5 minutes away.
We had like meetings at the house. You were like on the call list.
I was on the committee. When the toilet would fucking be overflowing,
like you're the third
call down. Go fucking, you know, get the wrench.
We were like a serious part of the staple of the congregation. Church. Yeah.
And we left over, you know, a lot of reasons, but primarily their inability as a community, our very community, to be an active solidarity with Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
And that can take a lot of forms. And I think when I say active solidarity, I don't mean like they had to put up a banner and start fucking protesting day one.
Right.
But they had to do something. They had to do anything. And part of that's from top.
And I think secondarily, like, they had to not do problematic shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like, I think that for me, it wasn't just the, like, lack of action on their part. It was that the action that they did take was problematic as fuck.
That's a good segue.
That's
so
the problem.
I've tweeted Peter Morales and the UUA extensively. They probably think I'm a pain in the ass, thorn in the side, close to Robin. But there hasn't been a very sincere discussion within our faith, and I'm hoping maybe the Black Lives UU group will insist and sort of push this discussion. But you and I have had it, maybe not recently. What are we as a faith, what are we going to do regarding individuals? When I say problematic, and I want to make sure, like, I'm not naming any individuals specifically, but there's problematic, like, oh, they said something, they did a microaggression. This individual, again, very prominent in our community. I'm in relationship with them. They know me personally. They've known me for 4 years.
We talked about that.
Yeah. You know, I said that they posted the article with the sort of Black Lives Matter.
You talked about this
whole thing.
I don't
think I did on the podcast. Pretty but anyway, sure. I didn't talk about her response back to me because I hadn't got it by that point.
Oh, okay.
And it basically was like, I don't believe racism's real. I don't believe white privilege is real. I don't believe any of this is real. But it's not just this individual. Our minister at one point in the aftermath of Ferguson referred to it as a race riot and, you know, even I think some other ridiculous things. You mentioned that Justice Visioning Summit, like after we've had these issues, after the one black member we have, Leslie, leaves the church, they're like, oh, Jesus, we got to do something. Let's have a summit and have a visioning and we're going to figure out what we're going to do. They got somebody like we're part of a larger region, the Joseph Priestley region. They got an expert to come in and sort of like oversee the whole thing. And in the middle of this, dude's like, oh, it's all victimization, the victim triangle. I'm sick of talking about racism. If all you see is race, all you ever see race, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, remember, we had a budget and we're short on money and we're just, there's a budget. Here's how much you have. Here's what you spend. And there was an individual that wasn't working, but had been there for like 20 years, an older white woman. And we ended up having a like six or seven. It was like a 4-hour debate. And people were accusing individuals that wanted to let this older white woman go of being misogynistic and it's not to our principles. The fight that we as a congregation put up to the point that we dipped into our endowment and we're like, well, okay, we're just going to, we have a budget shortfall. Fuck it. You know, that's just going to have to be okay because we're unwilling to make a tough personnel decision with an individual that really wasn't doing their job to the best that should have been done for that position. And that person ended up retiring like 6 months later anyway, right? All that time we invested for this one individual, yet when it comes to Black Lives Matter, we not only are not doing anything, we have support, are in relationship, and I would say matriculate white congregants that actively don't believe in white privilege, actively don't believe. It literally says things like Black Lives Matter is a racist movement and it's anti-white. Like that's okay in our church. I don't know how we reconcile that.
I don't know either.
At what point, and I know there's a dollar component to it, like, that's, you know, to some degree, there's a business, there's a building, shit's got to be maintained.
Yep.
And right now it's a bunch of white people. And well, if you come in as a minister and you're trying to shake up the boat with Black Lives Matter, you get canned, you get fired because they don't want you there.
You can get fired.
You can get fired. And so on some level, I understand, like, okay, your bread is buttered, but do we really want our bread buttered with these folks? Is this who we want to be in relationship with?
Listen,
is this who we want to build community with?
I don't know.
How do we even address these people?
Well, I think that it's interesting, and I hope that more of those conversations happen. It's certainly not one I'm willing to
I wouldn't foster. Expect you to have it ever. I'm a white person, and I think my mission in life is to move people like this along that spectrum, and I'm struggling in it.
Well, I'll say this. We have a track of content planned for the General Assembly this year. And two of the sessions that we're planning are affinity space based. So there will be simultaneous sessions about the same content or topic, but a black only space, a white only space, and then a non-black people of color space to discuss these things.
Very interesting.
And I hope... I'm hopeful that that will be, you know, a place where these things can be discussed and y'all can get your shit together, because it needs to happen. The two things that we are looking to do this work around is, one is anti-blackness. So we will expect all three of those groups to be talking about anti-blackness and how it shows itself in our faith. That would be a good place to mention those things. And then the second is next steps, and it's going to be two parts. We'll be separate for about an hour and a half, and then we'll come back together for an hour to do some work together. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's a very ambitious plan that we have, and it's a lot of work that's going to be put into it. And, you know, we're still in the planning stages of it right now, but I know our goals as a group, the Black Lives UU, you know, for lack of a better phrase for us, but a bunch of us that are leading it met in Boston last month and, you know, had some pretty deep conversation and reflection and discussion about what our goals are and how we can achieve them. And no one in the room, and this was said out loud and I say it all the time, is under any... We don't kid ourselves. I have said from the start when I decided to start this group, Black Lives UU, and to do this work with other Black UUs, that it's the beginning of something. I don't know what the terminus is. And I'm fully aware that the terminus might be us starting our own church and not being a part of the UUA anymore. I understand that. So does everybody else involved. Because there does come a point where we have to be honest and say, can this faith ever be safe for Black people? It's not right now. Let me just be perfectly frank in that regard.
Let's be, again, if you want to talk about being real, I think what you mean to say is, just how safe can the space get, and can it be safe enough for the you know, typical or average Black individual? Because it's never going to be perfectly safe. They're never going to happen. Not an institution like
you. No, and I don't
think
that any place is safe for anybody that might be a marginalized community. It's the same. Like, there's always going to be issues if you're a woman in a space.
That's not
what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about, though, is, can this function as a safe place of spiritual growth for Black folks? We have specific needs, and we have specific needs in this time that we're going through.
Absolutely.
Right now. And our congregations are not meeting those needs. That's just a fact. It's why we started meeting. It's what our discussions have been centered around, and they'll continue to be centered around that. Now, it is going to fall largely on white folks in our faith to decide if they're okay with that, or if they're willing to do something about it, because we are active contributing members of a community they have covenanted with us in. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to be what's going to happen.
And I think for white UUs, you know, I think the pitch is more, you know, this is about your spiritual health as well. You know, like, living in as a whether it's obliviously blind, whether it's willfully, whether it's motivated ignorance, but living in a white supremacist society as a white person who's actively denying the existence of systemic racism and you know, anti-Black racism, that's like, you know, to me, it's unfathomable. You know, I jokingly say it's like living in the time when people thought, you know, the earth was flat and that, you know, the earth revolved, you know, the sun revolved around the earth. But it's worse than that. Like, the history is so clear and so obvious. Mm. And our faith prides ourselves in being, educated. And like one of the covenants is striving for truth and knowledge. And how do you reconcile that with, again, the first principle? And we, you know, I haven't talked about this on our podcast, I think, but we were looking for a faith-based community. We had visited a couple of churches. We had started, you know, in our lives wanting more of what a church could provide us. We were seeking that which we wanted through community and not necessarily God. You know, I consider myself an atheist. I don't know what you think of yourself lately, but so we went to a few things. We go to this UU church. We kind of discovered it the very, you know, day one, sermon one, they're talking about, you know, the inherent dignity and worth of all people. And I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. You know, I found it. And, you know, I feel like a little bit, I don't say let down, but again, I feel like these are the people that if I can't move someone who's in active relationship with me, who cares about me, who loves me, who knows me and knows you and my family personally, if I can't get them to see the light, it's just like, you know, and getting this, so this one individual, the way, and I'm going to write back to her and I'm going to stay in relationship with her. But it's like,
I asked you to please turn whatever you write back to her into a blog post, because
I will.
I think it will be interesting. But it's to like, see you and engage, because I think a lot of other white people are in the same position, dealing with problematic folks and not know problematic folks they care about, and not knowing how to have this conversation with them,
and
how,
do it in a way that doesn't come off as I'm better than you, and
that's
you're a bad
why when
person.
We were talking last week about Grey's Anatomy, why it was such a powerful scene that they had, because it was a difficult conversation, but it was done with love.
Yeah.
It was an uncomfortable conversation, but one side was willing to actually like understand that this was shit she didn't consider. And the other one had to be vulnerable enough to be honest about those things. And we're not there in our faith.
Yeah.
We're not there.
Just a little tangent. You lowered your MacBook down to get the video for VU better.
Yeah.
And now we have eye contact.
I can see you.
I fucking like it. Just our eyes. I can't see your mouth. Just your nose above. But it's good.
If I move over, it's better because your mic is a little bit in
okay.
the way.
How's that? Is that good?
That's good.
Can you see my face?
Yeah. I can see, like, you know, I can see your face.
I dig it. I like it. Yeah, nice. So we should be moving on, but we were watching Empire, and
wait, hold on. You skipped right over Mike and Jay.
Oh, yes.
Because
right.
Let's stop. First of all, we haven't been to the movies very much since we moved here.
Have not.
For a bunch of reasons. Just there haven't been that
been
many
busy.
Great movies out. We've been busy. I was gone for the whole fucking month of October.
I think truthfully, we were...
And truthfully, we were really spoiled.
Spoiled.
In New Jersey, where we lived, we had this amazing AMC theater that had the reclining leather seats, and you get to pick...
Just pause right. Y'all know what she's talking about. It's a fucking, like... Lazy boy. Like, it's not just a reclining. It goes into like full sleep mode.
Full sleep.
It reclines.
Blanket.
It reclines all the way.
We bring
shoes
everybody
off,
brings blankets.
The whole nine.
It's really
and
awesome.
It's big. It's wide. It's like you can be like a
like
500-pound guy. Yeah, yeah. The middle arm comes up. They're sold
it's
in pairs.
Amazing.
So it's like two side by side. You pull the middle up and get like a love seat. It's unbelievable.
Great.
It's the way to see a movie.
For sure. And you pick your seat ahead of time, so you don't have to. You get there like right when the movie starts because it. Seat H3 and 4 are your seats.
Yep.
And
row
so
six.
Not knowing that, not having that, it's been like, do we want to go early? I mean, that's a lot of effort to put into a movie.
It's just time. Because you have to get there to get in line to make sure you get a decent
right.
seat.
Yep.
And then you got to get in line for everything.
You're
it's just a hassle.
Waiting. It's a pain in the ass.
It's a pain in the ass.
Because we were spoiled for years.
And when you say late, like we were maybe 10 minutes from the theater.
Yeah.
And if it started at 8 o'clock, you could straight up leave the house at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Get there at like 8:15 and the previews are ending and the movie starts. You're like,
sit down
bam,
you're like, boom. Yeah.
Here's
sure.
my seats front center.
All the time we would do that. So here we didn't have that. So, but Mockingjay was coming out and they had a double feature where you got to see Mockingjay 1 and Mockingjay 2. You get like a lanyard. We've done this before. We did it for the first Avengers movie. We did it for Hunger Games, I think. No, not Hunger Games. What did we do it for last?
What's the Robert Downey Jr.'s character?
Iron Man?
Yeah.
I said Avengers. We did it for Avengers 2, I thought. Yeah. That's when we did it for Avengers 2. But I thought we did a second one. In the midst of
we
that,
we did.
Too.
What did we do?
I don't remember what the
I
other
can't
one
remember.
Was. Harry Potter, one of those.
One of them.
One of these ones that has multiple movies, so you get to see a bunch of the different movies. So they were doing one for Mockingjay, and we were like, cool, we'll go do it. It's 4:30, the first one starts, and then right after it, 7 o'clock. So we get there, and the AMC is like half under construction. I mean, like, construction.
Serious
caution
construction.
Tape, like the whole nine.
Like, can we even go in here? What's
like,
this about?
The fuck? All right, so we get in, we get into.
Oh, and it's like the clear across the other side of town.
Right.
We're southeast, it's northwest.
It's northwest. I mean, it's still 19 minutes. It's not that
I understand, but it's not like, hey, let's go to this theater that's, you know, it's not even near us anymore. It's kind of far away.
But I think, like, in most people listening, if you're in a regular city, it takes 20 minutes to get to a theater anyway.
Okay.
That's, I don't think that's that big a deal. Anyways, so. We go into the theater and it's, first of all, we walked in, it said 85 capacity.
I saw that too.
And I was like, 85.
This is a shitty small theater.
Shitty small theater. Just opens.
I'm thinking like the double feature. You put us in a theater that seats 85?
We walk
fuckers.
In. Nope. They have switched to the fucking recliners.
The lazy boys.
Brand new screens. Brand new seats. And brand
I'll tell you
new
this,
everything.
The theater. So 85 of these big lazy boy seats meant like, I don't know. Am I doing like 10 rows? It was a lot of rows.
It went up to G, because I noted that we were in F and we liked that row.
All right, so that's 7 rows.
Yeah.
But the rows were, our other theater only had 5 rows, and the rows were only about 12 seats across. I think it was maybe 60 seats.
No, one of the theaters, the biggest one went up to H.
Okay, but so I don't think it ever sat 85. That seems bigger than our last theater.
Maybe.
Or if the 85 theater here in Grand Rapids, the space was twice as big.
Oh, yeah, it was huge.
And the screen was enormous.
Enormous. So anyways,
it was much bigger than our last
Drew,
theater.
So Drew, of course, did some recon, and they are...
Oh, I did the white thing, went right up to the manager, said, hey, see you doing the construction? Great, congratulations. When are you going to be done? And he's like, oh, we're going to have all the seats converted next week. I said, oh, wonderful. When is your POS, your point of sale, going to start selling assigned seats? He goes, ooh, we're dropping that bomb next week.
But we are back, bitches! So we'll be going to the movies. We went to see Mockingjay. We had a great time. I love doing that. It was really fun just going to see both the movies. And we got a cool lanyard and a pin with the three-finger salute and everything, which was cool. I had forgotten how much that first movie was like such a metaphor.
It's an allegory for sure.
Yeah, it was really crazy.
I was thinking about it. If you took the word capital, right? Yeah. So they talk about the capital,
right?
And put in capitalism,
right?
Take out the word snow, and put in white supremacy,
right?
Take out the word District 13, or they sometimes called rebels,
right?
And call them like protesters or Black Lives Matter movement or movement Black Lives, and every fucking
every
word
scene.
Makes sense.
Everything.
Every
and
word
it's funny
fits together.
Snow.
I'm telling you, man, it's white roses.
White roses.
Shit, it was fucking heavy handed. And you know that one guy that did the video that made the rounds on YouTube, who basically he was speaking very accurately about supremacy, but was allowing white people to not have any sort of complicitly
that dude
by
like,
blaming the 1%.
Yeah,
it's all the 1%.
Turned us
it's
on
the 1%.
Other.
Right.
We came here as slaves too.
Well, but in some there's some truth to that in that race is specifically used as a divisive tactic for white and black to gain political control for some, oligarchy elite folks. And in the same sense, Hunger Games is doing just that, but literally pitting people against each other, like to the death.
To the death.
But
if you look at some stats, it's pretty close out there.
You
look
at
Grand Rapids, you look at the disparity in poverty rate between black and white people, household
it
income
bears
between
repeating.
Black
we,
and white
we live
people.
In the fifth worst city for black people to live in. And
I have the stats right here. I was talking about this morning.
It's the fifth worst for a few reasons, but the one that just galls me, 38%. 38% of black residents in Grand Rapids live
below the poverty level.
The poverty line for a family of four right now is what? 21,000? 20,000? For fuck's sake, man. I live in this town. It's relatively inexpensive.
It is.
But to live here with a family on $20,000? Get out of here,
So you said 38% for black folks. 10.3% of white people in Grand Rapids are under the poverty level.
That's a factor of 400%. Four times more black people. If you're black, you're 400 times more likely to be in poverty in Grand Rapids than if you're white.
The average household income for a black family, $25,000. For a white, $57,000.
That's double.
This is the one that really, I think, is telling. Unemployment.
Yeah.
13%.
And what's the national average? Is down to like 6-7? Yeah. It's double the national average. And what's the 13% is for black folk. What's the percent for white folk?
I don't know. I don't have the percent for white folk, but let me tell you that the overall is 3.9%.
The overall city, I can do this math for you right now.
Yeah, we'll do the math.
What's the, do we know what percentage is black in Grand Rapids? Wasn't it pretty high, like close to 20%?
Yeah, 20%.
All right, so
I don't know if that's the greater area they're talking about.
What was the lower number, the overall?
3.9.
And black unemployment is what?
13.
Okay. My calculator doesn't have
it's so bad. You've had it for like 25 years. It's ridiculous.
It doesn't work.
You like hold it up to the light to use it. It's useless.
Well, I just was in the middle of doing the calculation
and it went out.
So the bad.
Anyways, whatever. I'm not talking about that anymore.
We'll get that another day.
Yeah.
Let's just say this. If black is 20% and it's as high as 13 and overall is like 3 point something, white unemployment has to be like 1% or 2%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be really low.
Really low.
Like astronomically low.
Anyways. So Mockingjay, yeah, it was interesting. And I was just thinking about how like easy it is for these white people to sit in this room in the dark and cheer for the rebels.
No, dude,
and make, and in their minds, they're
the victims.
They're the District 12 people. In their heads, if they're putting this scenario together, it's so crazy.
The allegory, the simile, the metaphor, it was so deep. There was a part in the first movie where what's her name?
Katniss
Everdeen. I forgot, I was going to say the actress' name. Where she's sitting on some rocks where they used to go hunting with Gale and a bunch of other folks after having gone to, I think, either District 8 or 12. It might have been right after they bombed the hospital kind of thing.
Okay.
So it's just, you know, this moment. And they got the film dudes doing the propos. And he sees a mockingjay and he tells her to sing something. And she sings this song about the hanging tree. You know, and it's got this like, you know, this rhythm to it.
Yeah.
And then they had that, you know. There was the, what's the big protest song? I can't breathe. You know, it had like almost similar melody to it, almost flow. Like there's a lot of things that were just like,
yeah, we kept like hitting each other in the theater.
Over the top. You know, like I'm shocked someone hasn't done a like Tumblr blog post with just kind of what I said, taking every word and making capitalism and snow supremacy.
Let's listen to,
an ad. Let's listen to a pre-roll ad from Domino's.
Damn it.
And I think you're not playing that.
I'm
going to
fix that too. Mother effer.
Oh, here comes our problematic white woman.
Oh,
Beatrice.
She's here, guys.
Hi, guys.
She's made it. Okay, sound. All right. So yeah, we'll play one of those right now. Check it out. Here we go.
Are you coming to the tree? They strung up a man, they say, who murdered three. Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you coming to the tree where a dead man called out for his love to flee? Strange things did happen here, no stranger would it be if we met at midnight in the hanging tree. Are you?
So
I can't hear my brother. It's got a similar melody. And that Are You, that Hanging Tree song, you hear the jets taking off. They use that song at multiple intervals throughout the movie to show like protest movement. When the district that does all the wood cutting, those guys blow everybody up. You know, they do their thing. You know, they do a bunch of stuff using that song.
Yeah, for
sure. Bunch.
I am Jessica Anderson. Interpretation of this.
What's that?
Changed, but that has erupted around.
This is.
I can hear my people crying. I can't breathe. And now I'm in a struggle and I can't leave. We're calling out the violence of the racist police. And we till people are free. Oh, we ain't gonna stop till people are free. Send out a call to all of those who leave.
I thought it was over.
Let our cook to the bridge.
This is when you play on FRN.
We'll keep on fighting with our hands in
Till people are free, oh, we ain't gonna stop. Till people are free, Black Lives Matter, yeah. We ain't gonna stop. Till people are free, oh, we ain't gonna stop. Till people are free, we ain't gonna stop. Till people are free, yeah.
Anyways, that's my favorite version of that song. It's by Jessica Anderson and Tyler Brooks. I'll put that in the show notes because it's just the best.
It's beautiful.
It's so fucking awesome. Mm. And it's a good cleanser to get us out of that, that stuff.
Should we do some news?
The news is coming on.
And I know you had your first piece, but I moved this into the news. The only piece of magazine articles I still read is Sports Illustrated because they give it to me for like $2 a year. I swear to God that it's free. I figured out.
They have to get the numbers for the advertising.
That's exactly right. The amount I pay is like postage plus like 30 cents an issue. It's ridiculous. It's so cheap. But so anyway, it's not bad. I like it. It's a good bathroom fodder. But so they had an article that I thought was not interesting, but kind of interesting. I'll just mention it really quickly. It was about a town in Illinois called Peking. Mm-hmm. And this town.
Peking, Illinois.
Peking, okay. Without the G. Peking.
Oh, Peking.
Okay. And it was supposed to be like, you know, sister city with Peking and China. So. And from the 1930s onward, newspapers had used a derogatory word. I only say the one time, and I apologize, chinks, to describe their sporting teams. So it was the Peking school. And they had mascots and shit. Oh, like, very
God,
inappropriate.
That's terrible.
Very insensitive.
What kind of sister city is that?
Well, listen. I mention it because it survived for, you know, decades and decades. And then in the late 70s and early into the early 80s, there was a lot of attention and, you know, anti-defamation leagues. There was, you know, people in Illinois like the Human Rights Coalition that was threatening to sue. They did a lot of stuff. A coalition from a Chinese American group came and petitioned the city and like, we can't do anything, blah, blah. You know, all the shit you hear about Washington football team and Dan Snyder, right? So what got it to change? What did it? Why is it no longer there? One person. A superintendent got hired, showed up, and just said, listen, the name has changed. We're calling it the Dragons. New jerseys have been ordered. The scoreboard has been taken down. And that's that.
It's over.
One person.
What were we watching the other day? Oh, we were watching that Middle of Nowhere or Master of None with Aziz Ansari.
Yeah.
And the Indian TV show.
That's a good show.
But
is that on Netflix?
It's on Netflix, okay. Yeah. And there was the one where, oh no, maybe that was something else. Oh yeah, they go to the office of the organization that helps fight discrimination in media and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they have a big board and it says Washington Redskins is number one. He's like, man, got that up there. He's like, yeah, man, that's been up there forever. I just, you know. He's like, and Aziz goes something. He says something like, yeah, you'd have thought it would have just been one call, phone call. Like, hey, that's a racial slur. Oh, really? Okay, we'll change it.
Yeah.
You'd have expected that to be the way that conversation.
And that's why I brought the article from Sports Illustrated up. Just because it, all these different things, lawsuits, defamation leagues, you know, commissions.
That's all it takes is a person.
One individual.
And one person
that can make the decision that has to be a little bit maybe brave and just do it. And Dan Snyder could be that person.
He could be, but he's an asshole, so he won't.
Well, and I wonder, so this thing went to Dragons, and I remember there was talk about the team name being changed to something like the Nationals, but not, right? There was some sort of ambiguous, referencing Washington, D.C. as the nation's capital.
Well, we had...
Maybe it was even the capital, but whatever it was, a neighbor of Snyder's, a rich fucking white dude, trademarked the name. And now he'll never change it to that. Like, it was the purpose. Like, oh, if you're going to change the Washington Redskins to something, this is exactly what you could and should change it to.
I'll tell you, someone
else trademarked it.
I've heard in the past couple of weeks two predictions of what it could be.
Okay.
On Minority Report, which is set in the future, and it's set in Washington, D.C., they changed the name apparently eventually to the Red Tails.
Washington Red Tails.
Washington Red Tails.
That's a terrible George Lucas movie.
Yes, it is. But it's not racially offensive.
The movie is. Neo's role was offensive.
The movie is, but not that. And then on the same episode of Master of None, the gentleman at the office says that it should be called the Washington Breadsticks. Because it sounds the same. Redskins, breadsticks.
Breadsticks would be good. Every time I hear breadsticks, I think of the TV show Glee.
I know, right? It's funny. All right, well, Well, I'm glad that they did that. And good luck to the Pekin Dragons this year and all their endeavors.
Yes.
Get your stuff together.
And they did that in 1980. Dan Snyder. And I don't know if, like, we're not playing, like, Wheel of, like, Offensiveness, like, which is, like, a worse slur, but, like, that was 30-some-odd years ago. Right. You're behind. You're the arc of the long curve of whatever justice, Dan, it's moving too slow.
Yeah. Well, this Wednesday was an amazing day worldwide for protests. Not only were there, you know, dozens, I think upward of 60 different actions on college campuses in solidarity with concerned student 1950 and the students in Mizzou and Yale and UCLA and all over the place. A great group called the Black Liberation Collective have come together, loose coalition of about 10, initially about 10 students from 10 different schools that came together to put together this day of action. And that was on Wednesday. But also Wednesday was the Marcha Nacional das Mujeres Negras in Brazil. Which was a unprecedented gathering of 20,000 black Brazilian women from all corners of Brazil that came together to really protest the treatment of black people and black women in Brazil.
And we should maybe get a little bit more in depth. I mean, you can on FRN, but I know racism in Brazil, in particular for black women, it's pretty bad, and not just bad. It's overt. It's violence. It's you know, Brazil's not the greatest place to be for black folk.
Yeah. So just to give some idea, and I think this is a really important piece of, like, kind of what they're fighting for is what is Brazilian? Who gets to claim the identity of Brazil and Brazilians? So,
and their population, it's not a billion, but their population's huge. It's like 300-400 million. It's pretty big.
Well, I'll say this. Brazil has the largest black population outside of Africa. 49 million black people.
Wow. So it's 200 million and 49 million. So it's 25% black.
That's black women. Excuse me.
Wow.
So let's start there. This is what I mean when we talk about the face of a culture and how anti-blackness shows itself. That this is a huge problem in Brazil. And I just think it's amazing, you know, to see. And I mean, you guys can search it. I'll put a link to just the Twitter search. Just the images alone just made my, like, heart sing. And a couple of friends of mine have been working with the organizers. Tinjiwe was one of the people that was helping to plan it. And it was just beautiful and awesome. And I loved every fucking second of seeing it. The other story I wanted to talk about.
And can you guys hear our problematic white woman squeaking her fucking ball right there in the back?
Because she can.
And she came down here. You don't know because we just, like, post the show, but we were recording at 8:30. That's her dinner time.
Yeah.
So 8:30, she's like, I'm going to get your fucking attention.
She's horrible.
We have to put it on pause and feed the goddamn
she's truly
problematic,
like, white the worst
dog that lives with us.
She is the worst. The absolute worst. So the other story I wanted to talk about was that the Jamaican ice hockey team makes history, the first Caribbean nation to become members of the IIHF, which is really, really exciting.
And that's the
International Ice Hockey Federation.
And that means they get to play in, like, World Cup type competitions and Olympic, if they qualify, they get invited to those things now, right?
Yeah. So they're led by their head coach, Graeme Townsend, the first Jamaican-born player in the NHL. And it's pretty cool. And just really sweet that they got to do this. So there's a video, so we'll listen to that.
I was born in Jamaica, moved to Canada when I was about 2.5 years old. Like all Canadian kids, I just had that dream to play professional hockey. I went the U.S. NCAA route, went on to sign with the Boston Bruins once I graduated, played 10 years professionally.
Pass in front, Townsend trying to get a handle, scores!
My first 5 years were spent between the American League and the NHL. So to my knowledge, I was the first Jamaican-born NHL player.
Just hard work by Townsend, just tough, solid hard work.
I used to joke around with my teammates, you know, during Olympic time that The only chance that I would ever have of playing in the Olympics is if Jamaica had a hockey team. And, you know, since I was the only Jamaican, I would be the head coach, equipment manager. I'd play the first power play unit. I'd be killing every penalty, maybe even playing goal. So it was funny back then. And when I was approached with this 3.5, 4 years ago, I couldn't believe it. It was a dream come true. Currently, we're associate members with the IIHF. So now the next phase is obviously to get the rink built in Jamaica and to start the youth hockey program. Of course, the financial restrictions are there, but that's why we're doing this. We have a group of investors. They want to see a team. Kids of Jamaican and Caribbean descent. They want to see those Jamaican jerseys, and they want to see us in competition.
Execute.
This is the first step in that path towards building a true national team. We're people of high resolve, and we want to see this happen. Now, there are a lot of things that people say are impossible, and yet, as human beings, we're always able to overcome those obstacles and achieve our goals, but we're not going to quit.
So shout out to the Jamaican Ice Team Jamaica, who made their ice hockey debut, and to their head coach, Graham Townsend. It's really fucking awesome, and I just think it's super sweet.
Graham Townsend, via Canada. I was like, man, how'd they get a team? Oh, dude from Canada.
Dude from Canada.
You know, and he's not kidding about the financial restrictions. I played hockey growing up, and it's still today an overwhelmingly white sport, simply because of the demand on a community, not even the individual families, on a community to have a ice rink, like as a facility to have to maintain, like that shit's expensive as fuck. Mm-hmm. And then you have to, like, if you don't have enough students and leagues and people skating and things happening, if you don't monetize it like sufficiently, it's a white elephant. Now it's a fucking building that costs a bunch of money. You got to maintain it, and it's not doing anything. And if you put that in a neighborhood where people can't afford skates and pads and fucking, like, by the very nature of the sport, the community is going to demand of people playing that sport. They pay to play that sport. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
you might have to pay an AAU basketball, and you might have to travel a little bit, but you can play basketball a lot cheaper. You can play soccer a lot cheaper. That's why it's the world's most popular sport. You can play almost anything. Football gets a little expensive because of the equipment and pads, but hockey, it's crazy. Isn't that crazy? It's a very expensive sport. I think in the league today, there might be like a dozen black players. That might even be too many. It might be like six.
Well, they went to this tournament. They did really well. They made it all the way to the championship game. They did lose in the championship game, but they did a great job. They had a course that they were them celebrating. That was their first game that they won 4-0. They just are so cute. They're using hashtags Black Ice, hashtag Black Green Gold. I just think it's awesome. Hashtag Soon Come.
Soon Come.
I love everything about it.
Are the players on the team all black?
Looks like there's 1, 2, 3 white dudes.
And Townsend, the Canadian coach, is a white guy, right?
No, he's not.
Oh, he's a black guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's one of the half dozen that have played in the league.
That have played in the league, yes.
Especially for 10 years.
So anyway, so shout out to them. I think that's really awesome.
Fantastic. I hope it goes the way of the
bobsled team. No, I'm Jamaican, so that's maybe they may, if you're newer to the show, you don't know that. I'm Jamaican, so big up.
People don't know that?
They may not. I don't know.
I fucking can't believe we never talked about that.
Well,
and, you know, and
me being Jamaican?
Yeah.
And you're just talking about your mom.
And as a point of distinction, I've never really referenced it again on the show, but in other instances, I know you specifically do not ascribe the term African American to yourself because you're not. You're
right.
Jamaican.
Yeah.
You're a Jamaican American.
Right.
And you're black. And
yes.
You prefer the term black.
Yes.
And there's a distinct difference between African American and black, and in particular the experiences each has. And there's even a difference between African American and black. And then within black, I would say like Caribbean versus like, you know, other regions, you know.
Like from Africa?
Yeah, yeah. And who wrote that book? Was it Chimamanda?
Yeah.
Americana.
Yeah,
Americana. It was about a woman who writes a blog that talks about these differences, and it's really great. But I can't believe we never talked about it. We never really mentioned it on the show that you're Jamaican?
No, I'm sure we mentioned on the show, but if they're newer to the show, it's not like a constant topic.
All right.
Well, it's funny we were talking about it today because I feel like a lot of times with your family, like they'll make like cultural assumptions about me thinking I'm black. Or
right.
that I'm African-American, and
right.
then I'll be like, no, like, I'm Jamaican, when and we don't do that. All the time, stuff like that will come up. So
my mother refers to you as black, but I might have had to not Coacher in that. But, Coacher. You know, she's not African American. She's black.
Speaking of coaching white people.
Yeah. So we've talked about white neighbors calling the cops on their black neighbors before. But Faye Wells, who's the vice president of strategy at a big muckety muck company in California, and like a lot of California, is being with the Silicon Valleys and the tech stuff, it's becoming very, very white and enclavey. And she got locked out of her apartment and was running out to something like, oh, I don't want to miss this soccer game or practice. So she just did her thing, called a locksmith. Okay. Called a locksmith, actual company, had a locksmith open her door, gets into her house. Didn't even like go in through a window or nothing. A few minutes later, she hears a dog outside whimpering, making sounds. She opens her door to two policemen coming up her stairs with a canine unit, pistols drawn, and she freaks out and slams the door. She's like, what the fuck? Like, there's, you know, they didn't say anything. They just got guns drawn. So then they start screaming, get out the door, get out the door, come with your hands up. And she's like, why? What's going on? And it ultimately, all told, was 19 police officers that were dispatched to her house. They didn't identify themselves as police. They didn't, they said, how many are in there? She goes, it's me. This is my apartment. You know, I live here. You do not have permission to go to my house. They went in anyway. They, you know, she offered her ID to show that this was her address and they didn't take it. They still had gun drawn on her for like extended periods of time, refused to answer questions. She starts going around. What's your name? What's your badge number? Give me your card. You know, she's really kind of like, you know, she's aware, like, hey, there's a lot of incidents going on, like this could have ended very, very, very differently,
very
for me.
Differently.
In fact, it quite frequently, does. Way too frequently, yes. Ends very, very differently.
And the story that they would have told, she did this, she did
absolutely.
That. Absolutely.
Why didn't she do this?
They would have talked
this?
About her why Duke degree and that she's an MBA from Dartmouth or any of that shit. It would have been, she was depressed.
Yeah.
She, you know, she, whatever.
Well, but, and the point of the story, and if you read the Washington Post article, which is, you know, it's like heartbreaking to hear her words talking about it. She's describing a moment of like terror and confusion. And like, the assumptive for black folk, in particular women in the face of authority, is this like, you know, prostrate yourself, acquiesce, demure, you know, you're not supposed to fucking even look people in the eye kind of thing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what white people assume. Like, well, you know, don't break the law. Don't do this. And if a cop shows up, you know, get on your hands and knees and lay flat and don't look them in the eye and, you know, be a good Negro and you won't get shot. Like, that's kind of like how like whiteness thinks about these incidents. But like, she's got 19 armed fucking people that haven't even said we're police and it's her fucking house. It's her fucking house. And she's like, here's a receipt from the locksmith, you know, all this shit. She finally, not finally, but she ultimately was like, well, which neighbor called? And she got the name of the neighbor and she confronted him. And she's like, I've lived here for 7 months. Why'd you call the police? And he got, you know, typical white dude, kind of defensive and blah, 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 blah. Ultimately threw in her face like, I'm a lawyer. You know, you can't sue me. Fuck you. Like literally, fuck you. Says this to her. Fuck you. And she calls the station. She wants a report. They finally give her a bunch of names of people that are there. It doesn't even include the two business cards that she got personally, like from cops that were there. So she knows the report's already bullshit. Why were there so many cops? They won't answer that.
Right.
There's supposed to be this investigation, though. I'm sure some many months later when this is not as big a deal, it'll be released. They're like, oh, this and this. But now she lives and has to fucking see this white neighbor goddamn fucking weekly. And just he averts his eyes and just her firsthand story, like this whole like believe black people, this for white folks, read this, believe it. And this is just, you know, these are the, how many of these fucking things happen daily you don't even hear about where the person doesn't have a platform to write about it on the Washington
Post. Again, it goes back to when we were talking about Grey's Anatomy last week where Amelia, the white woman, says, you know, all this is so new. And Maggie's like, bitch, this isn't new.
Yeah, it's not new at all.
It's not new at fucking
all. It might
all.
Be new to you.
It's everywhere. She says, sometimes it's a slow, irritating hum, and sometimes you can be killed. And that's a fucking fact.
Yeah.
And that's something white people just don't even like, because it's such a countenance-changing thing, I don't think that you can really grasp it. I don't think it's something you can fully, like, comprehend. But what you should do is believe black folks when they talk about it.
Yeah. And I mean, just this is a 125-pound woman. They dispatched 19 officers. I just, you know, I have not had any instance in my life where I've been surrounded by any officer with a gun drawn on me, much less 19, with dogs barking and shit. That's like trauma. That shit's gonna, she's gonna have nightmares and shit. And just why? Because a fucking neighbor thought, oh, a black woman's breaking into that. You know, it was her fucking house. She got a fucking locksmith. She had a fucking receipt. You could have done any number of things. any number of things. Anything. Call the cops. God damn it. You know, where's my...
God damn it. Fucking white people.
So here's a couple things that I saw this article I thought was pretty good. It's called Five Rules for White People with Black Friends. So you tell me how these rules sound.
Okay.
Five rules for white people.
Here we go.
Rule number one, do not ever leave your black friend alone in a broken vehicle.
Yep. We just had that death in Florida of the gentleman who was broken down. He had a friend with him and left him.
I'm going to say, I'm not trying to be like all lies on it, but like I wouldn't want to leave any friend in a broken vehicle.
Like, no, but like you,
in particular, a black person.
Yeah,
it's
but
dangerous.
Like to go like get something because I feel like that's what the scenario probably is.
Well, and like I'm not saying like it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But if a black person leaves said broken vehicle and goes knocks on the door, they get shot too. We've seen lots of that.
That's true.
Number two, do not ride dirty with your black friend behind the wheel.
Facts.
Yeah, you know, and I
don't do that.
I've on multiple occasions. When we go out with mixed company, I prefer to drive, but I prefer to not put my black friends in the position to have to drive.
Yeah,
it's drive. Much easier. It's like I'll just drive.
You
if a cop pulls me over, like, nah, didn't I couldn't do that. Sorry, can I go now? Rule number three: do not make your black friends trespass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, white folks like
we'll do that shit all the time.
Break laws and think nothing of it. Oh, we'll jump in this pool
right.
of our neighbor.
Right.
They're not home, and they'll do shit like that, and it's funny and it's cute,
it's
and
a,
nothing
it's a little
bad
story.
Is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a little story they tell, and for black people, that's not what happens.
No, in fact, we probably talked about it on one of the first episodes we ever recorded. But I went to an event. I don't know what it was. It was for Camden CCOP. Prisoners were coming out of jail, and I was helping folks get
health insurance
and Medicare,
like,
and
Medicare,
Social Security
yeah.
and shit. Mm-hmm. Right. Getting documentation done for individuals reentering from incarceration. And it was in, an area of Camden that maybe not be the most desirable. And I realized where I was, and GPS was like, oh, shit. I did an illegal U-turn and drove down a one-way street. Right at the end of this one-way street's a cop. Literally, I did this illegal U-turn, one-way street, bam, cop. And right, I'm like, oh, fuck. I see this cop. Like, I just did an illegal U-turn. I'm going the wrong way on a one-way street, and there's a cop right there. I roll my window down. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get to the CCOP Welcome Center, and I'm trying to – he's like, oh, it's right this way. Follow me. Give me a ride. Like, show me. Like, follow me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and that's
because,
exactly
– because he can apply, like, logic to you and be like, well, you weren't doing anything bad. You were just lost, and you needed to get somewhere.
Well, and
but for a black person, like, you needed to – if you'd have just abided by the rules.
And I'm not saying that this –
you'd have just abided by the rules.
When I actually told this story to a white person –
when white people break the rules every goddamn day.
The white person I told this story to – extrapolated from it, well, because you said you were going to the Welcome Center, he understood you were there and why you were there, and it made sense.
Because
and
you got the chance to say that.
Well, and he said that, you know, he was in a similar situation, and the police officer assumed he was there to buy drugs, and it was much, much different for him. And so white people are abused by cops too. Like, I was like, dude, shut the fuck up. He was at said Welcome Center. I'm like, what
I
are you doing here?
I can't.
Rule number four.
Yeah, please.
Do not leave your black friend alone in a venue black people aren't supposed to be at.
Nope.
Yeah.
And don't take us there, actually.
Yeah, you know.
Like, just start with that.
Yeah, I
you push it.
I push it.
You push it.
Well, the problem is music.
Yeah, music is
There isn't. It's like music's almost as segregated as church. It's either a black audience or a white audience. There's not
a
whole
definitely
lot
a black venue or a
white venue.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that.
For sure.
Yeah. And I don't like you being the only black person somewhere. That bothers me.
Yeah, I don't do that anymore.
Number five, pick us the hell up from whatever train station airport we're at so we can visit.
Yes.
Look, your black friend never says, get off at 125th Street, make a right, walk two blocks, sit in the barbershop for 20 minutes. When Tito rolls by, ask him where I'm at, and he'll tell you which court is hot. We don't expect white people to navigate our neighborhoods unprotected for the mere privilege of hanging out with us. Similarly, don't have us show up at some backwoods Amtrak somewhere in Maine and expect to figure out the right moose to get on to make it to your log cabin. The sheriff doesn't know me. So
yeah, remember for black people, the statement "you're not from around here" is not an offer for help. It's an implicit threat.
You just think of that right there.
Yep.
Oh, you're not from around here. Oh, I'm not. Could you help me out?
You're not from around here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. That reminded me of when we went to that fish show in Atlantic City, and my black friend from high school, Nicole, was there too.
Shout out, Gren.
What's up, Gren? And we saw each other across
the entire stadium. Madison Square Garden.
It wasn't Madison Square Garden.
Oh, no, it was in Atlantic
City.
But still, a 10,000 seat venue.
And I
she texts us. She goes, I'm the black one. In section whatever.
And
we're like, oh,
there she is. And I was like, hey, girl, what's up?
What up?
So, anyways, yeah.
The fish is particularly white.
Extra white.
extra white with a side of white.
Well, let's talk about some blackness.
Let's talk about a palate cleanser, dude. I'll just I'll let Obama say it with that in the background. Oh wait, I can't. Shoot, I blew it. But I'll let Obama say his piece.
Yeah, this week.
Folks want to pop off and have opinions about what they think they would do. Present a specific plan. If they think that somehow their advisors are better than the chairman of my Joint Chiefs of Staff, I want to meet them. We can have that debate.
Pop
First of all,
off.
He said pop off.
Okay. First pop off. Pop off.
I can hear that. All.
Folks want to pop off.
Folks want to pop off.
Folks want to pop off.
Every time I think about the word pop off, who do I think of?
Oh, fucking pop off.
Tanisha from Bad Girls Club. You want to pop off?
You want to pop off?
I love her. She's from Jamaica, too, by the way.
You're not going to get no sleep. Bam, bam. I'm not going to get no sleep. I'm going to sleep with y'all. Y'all not going to get no sleep because of me. You got to look that up now. Go get Tanisha from Bad Boys. You know there's a remix of that shit, dude.
It needs to be.
He said pop off. And there's actually a remix of that. I don't know if it's any good. Did you listen to the pop off remix?
I just typed in Tanisha Bad and Bad Girls Club No Sleep came
up. Well, let's do Obama first. Hold on.
All right, go ahead.
Folks want to pop off and have opinions about
JX Cannon
what they think
on
they
SoundCloud.
Would do, present a specific plan. Sound
if they a little
think
weak.
That somehow their advisors are better than the chairman of my Joint Chiefs of Staff. I want to meet them. Folks want to pop off. Pop off. Pop off. Pop. Folks want to pop off.
Hi.
Pop off.
All right, JX.
Folks want to pop off. Pop off. Pop off. Pop. Folks want to pop off. Pop off. Pop off. Folks want to pop. 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 Pop.
All right.
Pop. 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 Pop off. Pop. Pop.
Hey.
Pop. Pop.
Pop.
Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop. Pop.
Okay.
That's surprisingly good. Usually those joke remixes aren't too much, but
yeah, usually
my pussy wanted to pop off. Did you find
Let
play Tanisha?
Let me see if I get Tanisha.
Wop, wop.
Oh, wait, here she goes. Get the fuck up. The
wop,
remix.
Wop. God damn it. That shit.
I ain't getting no sleep because of y'all.
For real?
Y'all not when, getting no sleep because of me.
When that episode of Bad Boys was on,
Bad Girls.
It might have been on like, we VHS taped it. Like, it was like.
It's the only season of that show we ever watched.
Pre DVR
days.
It was the
first
And
one.
It was years and years and years
so
ago.
So long ago.
And she was on Marriage Boot Camp.
Yeah, I love
her. Oh, man. I felt kind of bad for her man, though.
You gotta follow her. They're not together no more. You gotta follow her on Instagram.
What?
Her Instagram game is toit. She has a whole bunch of business.
She broke up with that dude?
At the end of the season, they broke up. That was the end result.
Which one was he? Was he the wishy-washy guy?
He was the one that was like deaf in one ear or something.
Oh, I remember.
Anyways, this is a complete nonsense.
We've gone tangent.
We went way off.
From Obama's pop-off to Tanisha.
To Tanisha.
Six degrees of blackness.
I don't get to sleep because of y'all. Y'all not getting to sleep because of me.
I had one other. So we're closing out 2015, and there's the inevitable list of lists and shit. And someone's got the 11 blackest moments in President Obama's presidency. You want to give it a whirl?
Let's do it. Some of them probably are not like...
Just as much we do.
Tell us your nuclear plans in Russia.
I'm sorry.
He gives a face because he doesn't. The
oh, I love that
the
face.
Wait,
like,
what face?
Like, what are you talking
about?
I
have no more Russian campaigns to run.
Oh, here you go.
My only agenda.
His face when he delivers his line, though. Everything.
I know because I won both of them.
They got like subtitles.
Yeah.
And this one's stunting on the haters.
Stunting on
the
haters. Both of them.
So if you don't believe in yourself, then.
This is him getting a cut at the neighborhood barbershop.
Of course it is.
Oh, he does the uncle dance on,
on Ellen.
Ellen.
I hate Ellen, but that's true. Al Green at the Apollo.
So in love.
In key too.
Thank you. May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
And I say that walk. He turns around.
Oh, when he turns around, that was after Bin Laden was killed.
Greetings, massive.
Bring me to Jamaica.
Hey. Wagwan, Jamaica.
Yes. Yes.
I think that might have been one of our first
lame duck
black.
Yeah,
it
was up there.
It was one of the first like two Wagwan. Or three. Wagwan. Greetings, massive.
Actually give John Boehner a harder time than they give me.
Just clap back.
Which means orange really is the new black.
Oh, yeah, that was when Boehner was, like, refusing to put votes up and shit.
Well, no, and this is him at the, as a White House correspondent.
Yeah,
yeah, and there's always,
jokes.
It's kind of like their version of, what do they call that?
A roast.
A roast, yeah. He did good.
He was good. He got his writers doing good. Good job.
Code switching. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit, we does a handshake.
I think he was at Ohio State and he shook the white dude's hand. And then he sees the black
dude.
He went in for the dap.
He did. He dapped the black dude. I love it.
This is at.
Do you dap?
Do I dap?
Yes.
I don't code switch in that way.
I know you don't.
But
code
it depends
switch,
on. No, I'll say this.
Like, it's do you dap Christopher?
Yes.
Okay.
And Junie and all your nephews.
Everybody in my family.
Darius.
Oh, you dap, you know? Darius.
I would say black men generally.
Obviously, that's the only people that do dap.
Yeah, no, so I'm saying. I guess
but
I do.
Do you dap black men that you know?
I don't. What I mean to say is, I don't initiate the dap, but I will always dap back. Right, like there's a, like I'll go in for the shake.
So,
like,
so for the record,
I'm ready.
Folks,
I'm ready to dap it
Drew
out.
Drew is not with the clap back, but he is here for the dap back. He's here for it, and I think we just got the name of the show.
Dap back. Like I said, you can't like initiate the dap because if you do, then it's like the fuck. Like, what's this fucking like white ass fucking dude? Like, he trying to like code switch it up and dap me? Fuck you, motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? And I would say like the
Bishop Royster. No, that's a handshake. Or did you dap it out with Bishop Royster?
I bet I've dapped it with Dwayne. Yeah, me and Dwayne are on dapping turns.
I love it. This is fascinating. Because women don't dap, you know? It's funny, like, you in
you
this,
out,
like,
sis.
World of dapping.
Well, like I said, I don't...
Did you dap before you met me? No.
I'm trying to think.
Like, did you an Innis dap? No.
Yeah, probably.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't discover dapping with you. I might have heard the name of that with you. You know what I'm saying?
There's probably like a bunch of confused white people listening right now. Like, what are they talking
about?
Okay, anyways, play the video.
Well, but like I say, what I mean to say is I don't necessarily initiate it, but I also, it depends on a little bit of the relationship. Like, I don't want to like jump the dap too soon. Like, if I don't know you that well, I feel like going in for the dap looks sort of like presumptive in terms of, for me as a white guy, like, oh, you're just doing this because I'm black. Whereas if I know the person, it's like, okay, and this person, like call other people, like that's right. What we always greet each other,
right?
But I actually hug. I
know you hug though. You're
I hug my male friends.
Yes.
And when we were in Argentina, I found their, as a society, their, yeah, I wouldn't say maybe comfort level with contact in that regard, like,
yeah,
social contact,
like male affection towards each other,
yeah,
is like completely not just societally acceptable, it's like expected,
right?
It's celebrated.
Like, you walk into an office, and we had maybe at the height of our staffing up to like 12 or 13 people there. You had to go around, the expectation was to go to each of those 12 individuals, kiss them both sides of the cheek, because that's what you do in Argentina, both sides, and to give them a hug. And, you know, how you doing? Good day. What's going on? Like, to just, you know, like, that's what you did. And when American staff of ours would visit and not do that, like 6 months later, they'd be like, remember so-and-so came.
They didn't even say hi to anybody.
Like, it was still kind of like an insult. So
it is an insult. I mean, it was nothing to see like two older friends holding hands walking down the street. Like,
yeah, I wasn't necessarily holding hands, but
I saw that all the time.
I'm saying I wasn't.
No, you but weren't, but I'm talking about the societal
like
acceptance of male affection.
Correct.
Outside of a romantic context.
Like, I would say
it just was like
Kike and I were, he was probably my best friend in Argentina.
Yeah.
And I still consider him a best friend. I love him to death.
He's
a very, you know, amazing individual. He and his wife made our trip and stay there. Like, we couldn't have done it without
him. We wouldn't have even had an apartment.
And, you know, like the hug and the embrace we give each other is genuine and it's affectionate and it's nothing at all sexual, but it would be viewed by so many people, normal people here in the United States, like, what's with these guys? Like, you know, get a room or something. You know what I'm saying? Like,
not quite
like that. Like, nobody's grabbing butts or shit, but it's an affectionate embrace.
It's very affectionate. It's emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just putting these in notes.
I think American men are missing out a little bit.
Probably.
And their bromances. And Dap gets kind of close.
Dap gets close. But I think that, like, there's definitely a conversation there. Just as supremacy is detrimental to white people, misogyny is detrimental to men.
Sure. Patriarchy.
And this is one of those ways. Patriarchy.
Totally agreed.
You know, the fragility of it and the damage it does to men.
Can these dogs shut the fuck up? What are they doing? Having, like, a rumble back there?
Fighting or playing or whatever.
Damn.
And now Lippy, look at her. You can hear her.
I can hear
breathing.
Panting. I can't. She's fucking just hungry.
She's terrible. Damn. Anyways, play the rest of the video. You weren't even done.
Yeah, there's a couple more. Amazing Grace, two more.
Oh, yeah, this was at the funeral. Clementa. Funeral.
How sweet the sound.
Folks want to pop off and have opinions what they think they would do, present a specific plan.
Barack is bent over at the waist.
Oh, the little boy is touching his hair.
I love that photo. So great, that photo is so great.
Is reaching out his tiny little hand to touch my husband's head. And it turns out that upon meeting Barack, this little boy gazed up at him longingly and he said, I want to know if my hair is just like yours.
Mm. Wow, I remember that moment.
Yeah.
Nice.
So something else that happened this week through the White House.
Tangentially, he might be, say what you will about his presidency as an individual.
Yeah.
Just as an individual, he has been a master of public engagement on a variety of ways, in my opinion.
You know why?
Because.
No, not because. Because he's black and he had to be twice as good to get half as far.
That's the truth.
That's the fact.
That's the truth.
You know, you can't be, you had to be an exceptional Negro to get to where Barack Obama is. You can't just be somebody's son and roll your ass to the White House or an actor and roll your shit to the White House as a black dude. FYI.
I want to be president, daddy.
Thank you. It's
Jeb's turn.
The White House focuses on women and girls of color with a new $118 million initiative. After 2 years of pressure, this is in The Nation, advocates celebrate a step toward inclusion. On Friday, the White House announced its involvement in a new initiative to support the lives of women and girls of color. The phrase, my brother's keeper, wasn't uttered once at the day-long launch, but Friday's announcement was a victory for many who have critiqued the president's initiative targeting men and boys of color since it was announced last February. And after 2 years of kind of talking about the issues, we've talked about it a lot, that black women and black girls face, they are responding. And so specifically, the White House Council of Women of Girls is not acting alone. It's got $100 million from 20 public women's foundations that they'll be using to lead these initiatives to speak to the issues of women and girls of color. And it's really exciting. And I think, you know, it is great to see that stuff happening. Lots of my friends were there for the launch, so I was excited. Linda Sarsour was there in the house and a bunch of other folks.
I love
Linda.
It's
pretty cool. So it's really awesome. And I just wanted to lift that up and say that was really cool.
Yeah, and when are these initiatives, this is the announcement of the initiative, when do some of the things start taking place?
I think
place?
That they're already probably starting now in terms of, like, this was just, this launch was one of the first things because it kind of was a forum afternoon of kind of like presenting reports, and they had another report that came out. So
And I'm going to say congratulations. That's great. But, you know, women's freedom and Feminista and company, Leslie included, beat you to the punch.
Just saying.
Just saying. You're about a
and
month
we didn't,
late.
And we didn't have no $100 million in didn't have private money.
$118 million.
Just saying. Okay. Anyways, so I was, as I mentioned earlier in the show.
Hold on. I got to give you an intro.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
There has been an awakening.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Hey.
White people.
Yeah. So I was, I had an assignment the other day and I was.
It's been bad lately.
Yeah, it's been bad. It's been really bad. I've been just, my mind's been everywhere. The more work I'm doing, the harder it is for me to sleep. Mm. It's really terrible. And this week was crazy. But, so I was up late and then up early because that's what happens. I'll have like 2 hours I get to actually right. sleep and then I'm awake.
You sleep from like 2 to 4 a.m. or
not
three,
even like
four to six
or something like that.
And I, you know, you've never had as much sleep as me. Your sleep needs haven't been like mine.
Yeah.
But I feel like and I don't know how I can't empathize because I don't have insomnia. I don't understand it. Like it just isn't something I struggle with.
Correct.
But it's like. I don't know how you function. Like for me, like because I sleep so consistently and regularly, yeah. and I sleep like 7 hours on the button, 8 hours on the button every day, down, up. It's really kind of good for me. And if I don't get that, I'm like I'm all kind of fucked up. I'm shocked how managing you do with insomnia as it is.
Yeah, it sucks.
So you were up real early and you were watching what?
The Today Show was on, just happened to be on that channel.
Who is it, the Kathy and Hoda hour?
No, it was not. It was early. So
it's a good hour.
The A-team. Such that it is
right now. The sober team.
And I complain all the time about these shit. These like pictures of like cops helping little black boys do something or like one white person doing something nice for a black person. And like it goes viral and it's like, yeah. look at humanity. It's so amazing.
You know, the Baltimore mom is an example of that.
Yes. Like,
where she went out and took her son from the riots. And if you go and read her story now, she's fucking poor. Yep. She's got no fucking insurance. Nope. They had all these promises of people fucking giving her money
and
for interviews
what?
And shit.
I guarantee you her relationship with her son fucking sucks now.
She wishes she had never done it.
Of course.
You know, it was not
the fanfare and yeah. everything. It's so that, ridiculous. Anyways,
that I call that supremacy PR pieces.
Yeah. So one has been making the rounds. Maybe you all have seen it. The title of this is "Older Man Makes a Heartwarming Necktie Lesson in Train Station," but I'll let Matt Lauer tell you about it because he makes sure he throws in a nice dog whistle at the end of his piece. So here we go. Oops.
Morning, a young man struggling to tie his tie at a train station in Atlanta. So a woman in red there noticed, so she asked her husband to step in and help that young man tie the tie.
Okay, so it's a black young man and a white couple and a white man in the picture. Okay.
A photo, a random act of kindness that is going viral. It's kind of, so, you know, when you're a dad, that's kind of a rite of passage also to teach your son how to tie a tie.
That.
But it's very hard to do on somebody else.
Did you hear the whistle, people?
Let's see if you can hear it. I'll play it again.
Dad, that's kind of a rite of passage also to teach your son how to tie a tie.
That.
But it's very hard.
I wonder what he was trying to imply there.
So is he...
Black
Clearly,
fatherhood?
This black man doesn't have a father.
He needs to be taught how to tie a tie.
He needs this white man to save him because he doesn't have a father to teach him how to tie a tie.
Who's the co-host? Is it Matt Lauer? Is it Meredith Vieira still? No.
No, it's Savannah Guthrie. Well, one of these people. Natalie
the,
Morales.
She gave the
fuck you, Matt Lauer.
It's making the rounds, and there's almost a. You know, and it's weird. Like
he slipped it in so nicely.
Well, I think a year ago, maybe 18 months ago, this would have been presented as man helps black child, right?
Right.
It would have specifically stated that this kid was black.
Yeah.
And there's this like almost like deliberate avoidance of it, but it was still like I'm not on your screen. I'm just hearing that rather than watching it.
Yeah.
And it's like man helps, you know, young man, young boy. I could just tell. You didn't have to come on screen and say, oh, it's a black guy, a black kid and a white guy. And, you know, like, oh, but the dog whistle, the, you know, a rite of passage. And again, I bet a lot of people listen to that and like, oh, you know, Drew, Leslie, the John, you're being oversensitive and, you know, it's not that big a deal. And he didn't mean it like that.
Oh,
and it's not all that, you know, you're just taking this to mean that and you're reading this into everything. But like on some level, you know, it, that's the nature of this shit, is that Matt Lauer and the producers and everyone involved never thought anything of it. They didn't think that this was in any way inappropriate. They didn't. And if you asked him, he's like, I didn't mean it like that at all. What are you talking about? It doesn't mean that. But it's like that actress said, some days it's a quiet little rumble. Other days it's an avalanche that kills you. And this is like the death by a million little paper cuts. Yeah. And this is just one. And it's the kind of paper cut that I don't even think you might like notice it.
No.
It just kind of goes in one ear, and it's just part of the conditioning process that leads to the bias that leads to, you know, that supports supremacy.
Right. Yeah, because for me, like I said, I hate these things when they go viral and stuff like this. It's not because I hate like random acts of kindness. Great acts of kindness, do them all over the place. But the reasons behind why certain ones become viral, it's meant to give a message. And this message is gross. And Matt drove at home, and it's clear, because otherwise he wouldn't have made that comment if that wasn't the message that was.
And I think if it was a little white boy, it doesn't go viral.
No way, it doesn't go viral.
And I think, you know, the viral ability in this case is white people passing around saying, "Oh, look, it's not that bad. Exactly. Racism's not that awful.
Look at this
great
exactly.
one. How can there be racism when we've got a black president and this one nice white guy did this thing for this little black boy on a train? I can't believe it. You're nuts. How is there such a thing as racism?"
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So fuck you, Matt Lauer.
And you know, and that shit always, like, people do pass it around, and there's this like smug, like, look,
it's gross.
Look,
yeah.
It's like the article I was saying about the white church member. Its title was literally, "I'm white. I'm a nonviolent, non-racist white person who's actively opposed to the concerned student 1950
yeah.
movement." And I was just like, "That's the lead." Like that's literally like posted that with the hashtag All Lives Matter. Like, mm-hmm. come on.
Anyways,
fuck out of here.
Yeah.
We talked last week about James Wright. Is it Chanel?
My dude.
James Wright Chanel. He's blown up.
Got them Patty Pie selling the fuck out everywhere.
He needs stock in Patty Pie. Just like,
better drop him off,
real?
Break him off.
When Ed picked up the canister of, tear gas and threw it back, the iconic photo. I flood panties is his Twitter handle, but his actual name is Edward.
Yeah.
And he was holding that bag of chips. And for a while, I was like, you know, what is it? What are the bag of chips? And he comes on Twitter and he's like, there was riblets. It was hot riblets. And everyone's going on hot riblets. I tweeted the fucking original riblets company like 30 different times. Like, you ought to give this man some fucking stock, dude. Yeah. Like, at least give him riblets for life. You know, like, hashtag riblets for fucking Edward.
You
like,
want to talk about supremacy. Edward is facing
charges.
Obstruction.
The dude that took that photo.
Won a Pulitzer Prize.
And he's facing jail time and thousands of dollars.
Yep.
So, I don't know what I was talking about.
You're talking about James Wright Chanel.
Oh, and just like, you know, blown
Patty
up. And,
should, yeah.
And Patty should fucking, I mean, those pies are sold out.
You can't
sold
get one.
Out. Sold out.
I mean, I'm not stepping foot in a Walmart, but.
Listen.
They think they got the black folks back
in
Walmart.
The YouTube video of his Patty Pie review we played last week has like 5 or 6 million views.
Because it's fucking amazing.
It's amazing. So James Wright. Chanel is also amazing, and he's been doing other things, and we're now discovering more videos. He's posting some things out. So he had if you remember in our first Patty Pie review, I bought 5 of them.
Right? And he turned into Patty.
I bought 5 of them. He's telling, I forget who the individual
Raquel, I think,
in his house. So the last of said 5 Patty Pies, which apparently is going to be the last for a while because they're fucking backordered for fucking nobody's business.
I read something that said that they have to order like 250 million
sweet potatoes.
Pounds of sweet potatoes to like restock them or something ridiculous.
That's insane.
At least the sweet potato season. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's listen to his the last of the Patty Pie from James Wright Chanel. He's eating.
So.
Of course he is.
I have gotten down.
You got on that same hat.
To the last part.
Take another bite.
Of my Patty LaBelle.
Holding up the box again.
Sweet potato pie. Patty, I need a coin after this.
He does.
But.
Oh. What happened?
I'm buffering. God dang it. It's because I'm playing it through Facebook instead of through YouTube.
I think it's only on Facebook.
Oh, really?
I believe.
Come on, James. Why are you buffering on me? I'm not even running anything else. Stupid internets.
You want me to play it?
Yeah. I'm at the 30-second mark.
All right, let me move into it.
This wasn't how it was
supposed to win.
You're a little hot. Turn it down.
I wish that we could do it all again.
He's showing the empty pie.
Ooh, this pie. Patty. Girl! Patty! Patty, I'm talking to you, Patty. Patty, it makes no sense that every time I bite this damn sweet patty papaya,
patty.
It makes you want to say that.
Somebody's in there. There's a guy in the background laughing.
You are my friend.
He's eating more pie, by the way.
That fucking bedazzled hat is everything.
My friend.
All right, James.
He got pipes.
Got them pipes, though.
One of his videos is him singing a Jill Scott song really well.
Ooh,
I thought it was Jill.
I have to get a little Starbucks cup at this time.
Oh, it's a red cup. It's a Starbucks red cup, everybody.
Someday I wish upon a star. And wake up where the clouds are far. Behind me. What's that? The words, boy?
What are they doing that whiz?
December 3rd, I will be live tweeting it.
Yeah.
One of these
trying
mornings,
to gather some folks to do it with me.
You're going to look for me, and I'll be gone.
He's talking about the pie, right? Okay.
I'm going to a place.
He's brushing himself off of the crumbs.
Where my mother and my father will be there. I would do something like that. And we'll just walk around heaven all day. But I hope when I get to heaven, they have patty pie. Oh, when I get to heaven, I hope they have patty pie. Patty pies, yes. Patty cake make it shake, bitch. Patty cake make it shake. Patty cake. Patty cake, make a shake.
He's still eating the pie.
When
I
get to heaven, I hope there's patty pies. That's the he fucking did a chorus. And when I get to heaven, I hope there's patty pies.
When he gets to heaven, he hopes they have patty pies. So people have ran with this pie business, like pretty.
That's just on eBay for like $20 and shit.
It's everywhere. But beyond that, there have been a bunch of like parody boxes of other famous black singers. Potential.
So wait, let me. Would they do like Aretha pies and shit? What
oh yeah,
do?
All sorts of them. I'm gonna see if I can find the. Here they go.
Are they like good pies or like are they busted out? Like what's the?
I'm gonna read everything that's on each box. Okay. They really took it there.
They went deep.
Just a reminder.
Is this Tumblr or Twitter memes?
This is on Facebook, but I don't know where they came from.
Tumblr be doing shit like this, dude. Uh-huh. And I gotta say, like when this stuff goes like this and the memes start, like Hotline Bling, right? Like that video came out. My timeline had fucking like 30 different memes of different fucking songs and him dancing in like a half an hour.
It's crazy. So Miss Patty says the good life in a little circle.
This is the real pie.
The real pie. Okay. It says sweet potato pie and it says made with California grown sweet potatoes, butter and spice. And it has her little picture and her signature. Okay. Ready? Here we go. First up, instead of the good life, it says it's no shade. Big beef patty. Made with real southern meat, butter, and fuck you, Patty. This is Miss Aretha Franklin's ad. You know they don't get along at all.
I do.
Big beef, so they have beef with each other.
I get it.
Got it. Patty cakes. Bitch, I'm petty. Dionne Warwick, made with no fucks to give and sugar. Chaka Khan. Peach Chaka Cobbler. Made with peaches. And Patty, your pie gave me the runs. For every woman except Patty is the tagline there. Gladys Knight, chicken and waffles pot pie. Made with bitch, I've been had a food brand. I heard it through my ... is their tagline. Diana Ross has a supreme souffle made with real cheese, glitter, and bitch, I'm a bigger legend. Original Shady Diva. Sissy Houston's Cherry Pie, made with real cherries and pig feet meat. It's poppin'. That's the name of that one. Tina Turner gives us Red Cheesecake, made with love, life, and Nam Run Young Gay Ho. Nam Run Young Gay Ho. You know she does that in the movie?
I do.
Okay. Eat the cake.
Eat the cake.
Eat the cake.
Eat the cake.
Eat the cake. Keisha Cole's Hot Dogs and Porks and Beans Casserole.
Which just, why they do that to
Keisha? Made with government cheese. Stop, and Keisha. Why the fuck will y'all,
why are they doing that?
Why the fuck Keisha y'all stop Cole buying my albums?
Stop. Why they be doing that? That's not nice.
That struggle cuisine. The tagline for that one. There have been some racier ones. One about Miss Vivica Fox, which I won't even get into. It's called Grocery Pie. I'll leave that be. 50 cents off.
Just stop. I just stop. Can we just?
Yeah, please.
I'm gonna come out and say it. Okay.
She wrong.
I'm a really big 50 Cent fan.
I know you love Dave. 50.
I've loved his style and his rhymes, and I know that maybe that's like whack or whatever. I don't fucking care, dude. Whatever. But
you love Wangsta. That's like your favorite song.
No, that's not my favorite song. But anyway, no, Stunt 101 is my favorite song. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Just to clarify.
Yeah.
I mean, and you would dap 50 Cent for the record.
Oh, for fuck's sake, dude. But so, and in fact, I got to pull it up now. Because so she made a comment.
What are you pulling up? Don't pull up her thing. I don't want to play that.
No, no, I'm not playing that.
Oh, okay. But I don't even want to talk about it. It's inappropriate and I don't like it. And it makes me uncomfortable and I don't like it.
It's not that it's making, what I'm saying is she's ruined kind of 50 Cent for me.
What I'm
yeah
saying, that's the uncomfortable part. It shouldn't have ruined it, but I just think it's shitty what she did.
It is shitty because I don't think it fucking matters. It's none of nobody's business. It doesn't fucking care.
No.
Especially today. And we're already.
And the way she did it and how she
on the
said,
heels of
wrong
talking about this, you know, they had an episode of, you know, gay and hip hop. Like, there's been like, you know, just it wasn't appropriate. And, but there's like songs now that I'm listening to. Like, what was the one that was on the radio? Like, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
And I was like, fuck, god damn it, dude. It's kind of like. She kind of killed it, dude. I'm like kind of pissed about it.
You'll come back around. You love.
You can't skip this ad. It's already on.
Damn it, dude. Fucking
you can't skip this ad. It just said you can't skip this ad.
Jesus.
That's hilarious. I'm going to skip this because we're going a little long.
It's all good.
But Patti LaBelle, she really need to be giving some money to James.
What are you playing
James
right now? Something's playing on your end.
This is tight. Back then. They had the skit in the beginning.
Just can't believe Reebok just did
what a psycho.
Banks is your thing,
I do. I like 50. I she did him wrong. That's some fucked up shit. So don't read that one. You're
so
right.
So I found this article that goes through what $1,000 a month in rent would get you around the country.
Well, and let's just let people know we're skipping a long, very hilarious.
No, don't talk about it. I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to bring.
We're not going to play it this time, though.
But we'll play it another week.
I know. I'm just teasing it. It's worth it.
A story Quest loves to tell about lying ass Patti LaBelle. That's a quote from him, not me. That's
just
Quest
reading,
Love.
Just reading the words
that's
on
Quest
the page.
Quest Love said lying ass Patti.
So there's more to this Patti Pie.
Yes, the Patti saga will continue.
Pie Gate.
Yes, Pie Gate.
So what's $1,000 in rent get you?
All right, here we go. In Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, Jesus.
It will get you, in Bed-Stuy, a 300-square-foot studio apartment.
Is that legal, 300 square feet?
Apparently. Amenities, it does have hardwood floors and high ceilings, but the kitchen is so close to the bed, you could probably cook an omelet while taking a nap. There's also a communal bathroom you have to share with other tenants. Nothing says fun like a toilet clogged with someone else's fecal matter.
Wait a minute. There's a 300 studio and you don't even have your own shitter?
Nope.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Bed-Stuy.
I can't be living somewhere where I can't, like, poop on my time.
Bed-Stuy.
$1,000?
1,000.
Whew.
Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay.
$825 a month will give you a 1,103-square-foot two-bedroom apartment in the Hoover neighborhood. Amenities, there's a shared pool and tennis court, So basically, you can rent till you retire. In Cleveland.
But then you live in Alabama.
True. In Cleveland, where we'll be heading, $1,175 a month will get you a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath, single family home in Cleveland Heights. To start, it's a house.
Cleveland Heights is a fucking ritzy ass
An entire house, people. There's a second floor and a 2-car garage. Also, you know you're an in real life adult when you live in a house that has a security system.
That's all it costs to rent a house in Cleveland Heights?
Yep. In Nashville, $1,006 in the River's Edge neighborhood will get you a 716 square foot 1-bedroom apartment. You have a patio, a shared pool, and landscape grounds. Essentially, you get a great Gatsby, man. You got a main.
When we lived in Chicago 15 plus years ago.
More than 15 years
ago. Yeah. Almost 20 years ago.
Yep.
We had 890 square foot, 1-bedroom, 1-bath. Mm-hmm. And it was a decent apartment. It wasn't bad. It was a corner unit. It had a beautiful view of downtown. It was downtown Chicago. Again, 20 years ago. Was it $1,400?
Something like that. I don't know how we afforded it. Anyways. Augusta, Georgia. $750 a month will get you a 2-bedroom floor of a historic home that covers 1,100 square feet in Old Town, has a huge living room with a fireplace, a clawfoot tub, central air, a massive backyard, and wait for it, a porch swing. Pack up your parents' car and move to this house right away. New York City, $960 a month. The size is not listed, but seeing as your bed also serves as your door stopper, probably not a ton of space. It's in Little Italy. The apartment boasts having central air, but you'll have to enjoy it with a stranger who will be your brand new roommate. Yes, he already lives there. You and this stranger mate will be cool as fuck all summer long.
So it won't even say how many square feet it is.
Yeah. And it's shared.
Yeah. And it's still $1,000.
$960. All right. Portland, Oregon, $1,275. Get you a 1-bedroom apartment in the Belmont neighborhood. This spot has a hookup for lazy people. Why? It includes a microwave and a dishwasher. It's also close to 3 bus routes, so you can drive. You can be driven around town by your chauffeur, a.k.a. the bus driver.
And just for perspective, I don't think it's in this article, but in our neighborhood in here in Grand Rapids, on the southeast side, you could get for $1,000 an entire house.
Oh, yeah.
Not just a like bigger than
Pretty
the one
big
you described.
House. Yeah.
I'd say maybe like 1,300, 1,500 square feet.
About that.
2 stories, garage,
when
the whole
people
works.
Ask me why I move, I'm going to just send them this article. Like, this is fucking why I move. Milwaukee. $1,075 will get you a 1,000-square-foot, 2-bedroom apartment occupying one whole floor of a house on the Lower East Side. It's a vintage house that needs a little TLC, a.k.a. a hipster's paradise.
Yeah, but then you're in Milwaukee.
True.
Hey, but they got Summerfest.
What are you so down on Milwaukee? You know we live in Grand Rapids now, right? You don't get to say that shit no more. You talking about people's cities like, oh, you live somewhere cool.
Milwaukee.
You don't.
The Brewers.
Mm. Atlanta, Georgia, $1,050 will get you a 624 square foot studio in the trendy Old Fourth Ward.
Good God.
There's a fully equipped fitness center and an outdoor barbecue complete with a picnic area, a.k.a. your time to get jacked and eat a ton of ribs. San Francisco, the most expensive city in the country, $1,285. The size, going on a limb here, but your body could probably fit inside. In the financial district, the amenities, it includes a twin bed with a new blanket and sheets. Seriously, it's a closet. Asheville, North Carolina. I want to move to North Carolina next, actually. We've been talking
about this. Yeah, Carolina's
after
nice.
This, I think that's where we're going to go.
It's the right temperature.
Yeah, $1,204 will get you a 2-bedroom apartment with 966 square feet in North Asheville. This place has a walk-in closet. Fort Worth, Texas, $1,500 will get you a newly renovated 3-bedroom, 1,163 square foot home in Ryan Place. In Charleston, South Carolina, $1,000. Doesn't say the size, but there is a balcony. It's on James Island. There's a pool, 24-hour fitness center, and only a couple minutes to walk to Folly Beach. Denver, Colorado, $983 will get you a 2-bedroom, 1,120 square foot apartment with 2 baths. In Aurora, you have a hot tub and an outdoor pool.
So there was an article today that I couldn't find. I tried to look for
There's
it.
There's only 2 more.
All right, but I'll just say this. It was talking about the most expensive places to live for schools, if you want to have good schools.
Right.
And some of the best schools. And they looked at the quality of the school to the median home price
right.
and the average income in an area. And there were schools in California that in order to live there, the median home price was like $6 million.
Wow.
And to afford a $6 million house, you're talking about like 35, like 40 grand a month. So you're talking about what 1,000 gets you? This was what 40 grand gets you. It was insane figures. And the most economical places for good schools, in fact, included like 2 or 3 districts in Chicago and Detroit. There was like not every zip code in Chicago, Detroit, but there were.
But some were there.
There were some
zip codes.
Not surprising. And it was the, it wasn't that the school was the best school, but it was a very good school at a very economical cost of living.
Like the ratio,
right. The ratio of the median household income the measure they looked at is how much the average people make in that town,
right.
And how much it costs to live in that town, and whether that's like a 1-to-1, a +1, you know what I'm saying? Like if the median income is 20 grand and the average house costs, you know, 80 grand, it's like, oh, that's not very good. And there's 3 or 4 zip codes where that ratio is quite good and still has good schools. Mm-hmm. And there were Chicago and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But probably because the cost of living in those places is
high.
Depressed. No, depressed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mean right now. I don't think Chicago's depressed, but
parts of zip codes of Chicago are.
Maybe.
Detroit sure is.
Well, Detroit definitely. Philadelphia, $1,250 will get you a 650 square foot one bedroom apartment in Walnut Hill that takes up an entire second floor. There's a bay window where you can read by gauzy sunlight.
Walnut Hill, that's an area?
Yeah, Walnut Hill's an area.
I guess so.
It always was an area. It's a very historic area, actually. What you talking about? You don't know nothing about Philly. Salt Lake City is the last one. Utah, $1,000 will get you a two-bathroom apartment that covers 1,015 square feet in Mill Creek and has a gas fireplace for romantic nights in. So
and comes with your vestments. And,
so all these areas are in downtown areas. I forgot to mention that. So they're all like meant to be.
Oh, and if you're doing the true Grand Rapids comparison, $1,000 downtown in some of the most nicest like condo. Like these redeveloped places they've got might only get you, again, like 600 square feet, one bedroom, but it'll have a pool and a doorman and parking and shit.
Yeah. I would put it more like Atlanta in that answer because that was a 624 square foot.
I think I think downtown Grand Rapids is less expensive than trendy Atlanta, but probably.
Maybe. I don't know. Atlanta's cheap. I mean, for real, it really is. Like, I'm just being honest. It's not expensive at all. Right. For the size city it is, it's super inexpensive. So
I hear you on that.
I have to disagree with you on that one. Do we have any TVs and movies? Well, we talked a little bit about Middle of Nowhere. Or, I don't know why I keep calling it that. Master of None.
Master of None.
Which was good. I thought, you haven't watched the end of it. Had a very unexpected ending. So I liked that. Hopefully they'll do a second season. If not, they did have, you know, some closure. So I think that they could stop, but hopefully they won't. And nothing else, really, just the regular stuff we've been watching, nothing new. Yeah. I did start watching this show called Flesh and Bone. It's
What's
on
that?
Stars. It's about a ballet company, but it's really about this girl. I don't know. It's kind of, I don't know how I feel about it yet. I've only watched like 2 episodes.
There was a,
and also weirdly, it's Stars, but they released them all on demand at once. They're also playing them every week.
Okay.
But they were like, if you want to watch them all, watch them now. So
they're
it's interesting, which is what made me be like, okay, I'll check it out just because they were.
You can binge it.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate them like trying something. I was like, okay, well, if this is the content they purchased.
I think that is an acknowledgement that there's a segment of individuals that are consuming content in that way.
Yeah.
That you want to accommodate them.
For sure.
So there's an article about all the shows that got canceled, and there's quite a lot. And some we really kind of like Wicked City's getting canceled.
I like that show.
I know. But there was a...
Not cancel The Grinder, even though I hate fucking...
I don't know
Rob
if this
Love.
Was an unheard of, but certainly an unusual move. The showrunner and executive producer for The Bastard Executioner is the guy that's behind like Sons of Anarchy and some
other
pretty popular shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the network didn't. He canceled the show himself by taking out an ad on The Hollywood Reporter saying that the audience has voted and they've deemed it crap and, you know, he doesn't sit in a bubble writing for nobody and, you know, he wants people to like his show and have an audience and no one's watching it and, it sucks, but that's that and he's done.
Wow.
Like the producer's like, nah.
The
numbers are just shit, you know.
Yeah.
And he's saying that it took a lot to do it and it put a lot of effort and energy and just, you know, for him as a auteur, an artiste, whatever. And I shouldn't say that lightly. I guess that's his craft and he wants to be, you know, part of that. You and I have talked about that. Our friend Jessica, who's an actress, that like, you know, I can go practice the harmonica in the garage and still derive enjoyment in my artistic efforts. An artist can go paint and do other things. An actor, if they're acting without an audience that, you know, and then an audience that has sizable metrics that made this money, these maybe saw it. Like there's some, you know, that's inherent in the I don't want to call it the worth that you derive out of your craft, but it's just a metric and that people think and look at, and you would never act in a vacuum. That would be strange.
Yeah.
To have no audience and to act. That'd be very bizarre. Like, what, like you're just on the street corner as a weirdo. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You're not an actress. And this is the kind of same thing. He's like, hey, listen, people aren't watching it. Done. Pull the plug. It's too costly for me on a personal level to do. But he did it by taking out an ad, which that was kind of interesting.
Mm, that is pretty funny.
Shout out to him.
Yeah. Shout out, I guess.
Yeah. That's a good move. Mm. You're going to go down, fucking
go down. On your terms?
Yeah.
I guess that's true.
Go out on your terms. Versus, like, how many shows have, like, pulled the Married with Children? We're like, are they going to come back? Are we going to renew it? We're not going to renew it. Oh, you left with a cliffhanger? You're canceled.
Right.
You know, like
you Girlfriends.
Yeah, you don't even
that
get
that fucking writer strike fucked a lot of people, though.
It did.
So we're going to be traveling to Cleveland to participate
Year Without Tamir.
Support the Year Without Tamir commemoration this weekend with family of Tamir Rice. I would encourage folks to either host or attend a similar commemoration in their area. You can go to justice4fortamir.com for a good, really well done timeline of events in the last year since Tamir was killed, and also plans for this weekend and a link to other actions. You can also always go to fergusonresponse.tumblr.com to look at actions in your area, generally speaking, and of course for Year Without Tamir as well. I think that's it.
You know, we weren't podcast standing for, but I was going to say, we referenced, I was on the Movie Trailer Reviews with Chris.
Chris
the Tremors. Mm-hmm. And D-Bomb really cracked me up. There was a bit where one of the characters in Tremors, the guy's name is Mr. Chang. That's the character's name. And we're talking about him, like, yeah, old man Chang. And there was a pause, and I kept talking. D-Palm was like, yeah, that's his name, dude. You didn't say anything racist. Don't worry about it. He, like, totally picked up on it. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I kind of didn't know. Like, and then we actually looked it up. Chris, like, was, like, doing, like, on-the-fly research. And the dude that is playing the character, Mr. Chang, it was originally supposed to be a Vietnamese. The role was written as a Vietnamese shop owner. And he's Chinese, so he's like, well, we'll just, you know, call it Mr. Chang. So the actor himself came up with the name Mr. Chang. And then I saw that, I was like, man, that guy's like, it's like typecast. He's every, like, you know, like, you know, Chinese character movie, whatever. Like, wasn't he in Big Trouble Little China? And like, oh, now you are being racist. You just think he's in it. So they go to IMDb page.
And it was him.
It was him. And his IMDb page is a picture of him from Big Trouble Little China.
Love
with
it.
With, like, the Fu Manchu mustache and
so
shit.
So you were not inadvertently racist.
No, but it felt touchy. It's touch and go.
Well,
there
I'll
for
look
a
forward to hearing your awkward moment of potential racial.
Well, the best was D-Palm, like,
calling you.
Oh,
out.
But it was like subtle.
D-Palm's so funny.
He picked right up on it. He's like, no, that's his name, dude.
He's his name, dude.
It's you're okay.
Good.
You can't.
Like, don't worry about it.
I can't believe you. Like, the pause was like, you're like a pregnant pause, like,
right?
His name's Mr. Chang. Ooh. And then,
Was it?
It was good. So I think it's out now, but you got to be
premium.
MCR premium.
MCR premium, definitely. Yep. Do it anyways. They have amazing shows. They do Hound on Cupid, and it's great. We love Chris.
I think we pay for maybe more than two. I know at least two that we subscribe to.
Yeah, we subscribe to two, and he's one.
Movie
yeah.
Trailer Reviews. Yeah. MCR premium.
Podcast Phantom just went premium.
Oh, they did. I heard that.
Yeah.
But it's not that they're doing exclusive.
They're doing Patreon.
But they're still going to do content, but then they're going to do exclusive content?
The same as everybody else.
They'll okay, that's what I thought.
Some behind a firewall that you have to pay for.
Yeah, I like, and I we should stand for them. You've been listening. I haven't.
I love podcasts.
I haven't
fandom.
Been listening to it. I've been listening to it passively, you know, while you listen, right? Like, because we're in the same room, we work together and stuff.
Yes.
And what's her name?
Nina.
Nina
Perth.
And her husband is
Don.
I think they've got a great pacing. I love the tone and timbre of her voice, and the show's done really, really well. I love their reviews. They get a lot of feedback from people. I think it's a Facebook group and an email.
It is a Facebook group. It's an awesome Facebook group.
It's a really good podcast. It's an enjoyable show.
It's a great, great, great show. But I think that's it for tonight.
I think that is it tonight. Where am I? Oh, you know what? It's not it for tonight.
Why?
Because I'm not going to play. Oh, it went away.
What happened?
I've been watching. You've heard me do one thing that said Leslie's name, and it was actually from South Park.
Right.
And there was. Let me see if I've got more. So here's one. I don't think I've played this yet.
There she is, officers, right there. I told you to stop chatting with your friends, didn't I, Leslie? You see, officers, apparently Leslie thinks that talking to her friends is more important than learning about diversity in third world countries. It's that one. That's her right there. You remove her from my school.
So they've been going on with the different Leslies. Here's
it's the same Leslie.
Same
but
Leslie.
They keep going.
Have you noticed changes lately?
Yeah, a lot of changes.
They aren't a coincidence, officer. They are all part of a plan to take down your beloved town and everyone in it.
What?
What do you know about a little girl named Leslie?
They're coming for Leslie.
And here's the last one.
Do you know Leslie?
So, yeah, they've been all ominous, and I won't, like...
Don't, because people might be watching
it.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to spoil it. And it's not even a good, you know, South Park's, like, marginally, like, garbage.
It's definitely
but this,
garbage.
This plot line with Leslie's kind of cracking me
it's
up.
It's only funny because of the way that it's just my name.
Because it's Leslie, yeah. Do you know Leslie? So I had to get... I didn't want to be trolling you. I didn't want to be kind of, like, mean
don't
about
be
the podcast and doing kind of stuff you don't want to show. But okay. Where's my...
Ooh,
I got
to turn it up.
Good night, everybody.
High five.